Thank you. Good afternoon. We wanted to give you all an update in terms of our flooding that's occurring in many parts of the state right now. We have now declared 50 counties state disaster areas. That includes obviously Polk and Story and the other counties that have had flooding in the last couple of days. The good news is that there is assistance available for certain homeowners in those 50 counties. They can receive up to $5,000 through the state's individual assistance program for things like lodging, temporary lodging, food, replacement of things like water pumps or water heaters. We urge those that have had significant damage to their homes or apartments to call 877-937-3663, 877-937-3663, or dhs.state.ia.us, that's dhs.state.ia.us, and they can click on Storm Help. There's an income eligibility requirement for that state individual assistance program. It's up to 200% above the poverty level in terms of annual income. That's about $40,000 for a family of four, roughly $22,000 for an individual. But that program is up and running no matter what happens or doesn't happen with any additional FEMA help. We do want people to know that they should call and inquire if they have serious housing issues right now. The other area we're really focusing on is the water situation in Ames. We have 56,000 residents in the city. We are working to make sure they have adequate water there. A boil order is in effect, but what we're trying to do is provide as much bottled water as is necessary. We've already secured six trucks of water, and we have more than 20 ready to send with the help of FEMA and the Safeguard Iowa partnership. So there is adequate water available at six distribution sites. The Walmart, and we'll provide this list to all of you, the Quality Inn, which is at 13th and Dayton Road, Sam's Club, McFarland Clinic, and Lot 61 by the water tower, I believe. We can get you more particulars. I guess those are at least five sites. We hope the water issue is resolved by Tuesday, but we don't know with any certainty at this point. Next, I'm going to have Dave Miller give you a brief update in terms of additional areas in the state that are having challenges, and to give you an update in terms of the weather forecast the next 48 to 72 hours. Dave?
Thank you, Governor. A couple areas we're looking at in addition to Ames. Of course, Colfax continues to be an issue for us. We've been working with the city of Colfax to get them pumps and pump water and make sure their critical facilities are protected. We'll also look at downstream communities. We've looked at everything from Huxley, again, down to Colfax, down through Oskaloosa, and over to Keosauqua. So whether they need sandbags or poly, whether they're requesting pumps, other state resources, they're on our radar screen, and we keep reacting to their needs, and we'll continue to do that as we look at things downstream. The governor mentioned the weather. It's one of the things that we're really paying attention to. We had a briefing and discussion with the National Weather Service this morning. Also worked with the Corps of Engineers to look at outflows from the reservoirs. Right now what we're hearing is in the next 24 to 48 hour operating period, we can expect some rain primarily in the area north of Highway 30. Most of you are already hearing this from your own news services or through the Weather Channel. But what that means to me is that, and means to us, is frankly things are pretty well saturated, and we have a very narrow window of opportunity to mitigate any future damages. So we've encouraged locals to look at their critical infrastructure, what needs to be safeguarded now, what state resources they may need to do that. So if they need more sandbags, they need more poly, we need to get in an area to protect things like water, wastewater treatment plants, that we can get ahead of the storm. When I say there's a narrow window there, if we get more precipitation than anticipated, we could have severe flooding. If it comes further south than what the Weather Service is currently predicting, again, we can have severe problems. So we're paying attention to that. We'll have another briefing from them in the morning that'll tell us a little bit more, so we can be a little more exacting in how we distribute our resources.
Thank you, Dave, and all of us will be available for any follow-up questions. And just want to thank Dave Miller and his team at the Department of Homeland Security and Emergency Management for working extremely hard here the last several weeks on these flood-related challenges. The Emergency Operations Center is up and running. The Lieutenant Governor, as my Homeland Security Advisor, has spent quite a bit of time out there as well. So we'll continue to keep all of you posted as we learn of additional issues and challenges. Next, the Director of the Department of Transportation, Nancy Richardson, on a road update statewide. Thank you, Nancy.
Yeah, thank you, Governor. First, I'm going to start with facilities because we did, we are residents of Ames, we were and are being affected by the lack of water, potable water. So our offices, our main complex that houses several hundred employees in Ames, plus our driver's license station in Ames, and what's called our District 1 office, which is the engineering office that serves this part of the state, those are all closed today, and only essential employees, a very small number of employees, are in the office. We are optimistic that we will be able to return. I just gave notice that we will return to normal hours tomorrow at those three facilities, although certainly employees will need to bring their own drinks. We'll have water and sanitary wipes and those sorts of things to, since we won't be able to have pure water. I also then want to talk about roads, and I'm going to, even though you may have the latest, I want to make sure we understand which state roads are closed as of the latest report about 15 minutes ago. First, I'm going to talk about one that isn't, and that is Interstate 35 is now open, all lanes both directions between Ames and Des Moines, so that's very good news. For those that are still closed, and these are all around the state, relatively short list but important, US 61 and US 136 in Lee County, and that has been closed for some while. The road is closed near Keokuk, and traffic that normally would take that Des Moines River Bridge near Keokuk is directed to the Des Moines River Bridge at St. Francisville. So that's been a workaround that folks have been dealing with. A relatively new addition is US 65 in Jasper County. The northbound lanes, we're doing some lane restrictions there and watching that very carefully full time. There is concern there that that'll have some downstream effect. That's just northwest of Mingo, the diagonal. So that's one to watch, but there is some lane restriction, although you can still get through or could 15 minutes ago. Iowa 2 in Fremont County, the right eastbound lane is closed between Interstate 29 and the Nebraska line. Iowa 16 in Wapello, the roadway is reduced to one lane of traffic between 9th and 8th Streets in the city of Eldon. Iowa 92 in Mahaska County, the roadway is now closed between Iowa 23 and the Mahaska County Road V13, and that's near Kioma Village. That had been restricted, reduced to one lane, but now is completely closed. Iowa 92 in Mahaska County again. The road is closed between Iowa 23 at Oskaloosa and Mahaska County Road V13, Rose Hill. And there is a detour set up for that. Iowa 98 in Van Buren County, the road is closed at the Des Moines River crossing between Dowds and Leondo. Iowa 117 in Jasper County, the roadway between Jasper County Road F48 and Interstate 80 near Colfax is closed. And finally, Iowa 210 in Story County, the road is closed south of Cambridge at the South Skunk River crossing and at the Indian Creek crossing in Maxwell. I will tell you those are the state roads that are closed. We want to make sure that your readers understand that there are, in addition to that, lots of local jurisdiction roads, county and city roads that are also closed, and so you can't just turn off anywhere to avoid a state closing and find that other local roads would be open. I want to talk about a couple of potential issues. I mentioned the 65. We are concerned. We're able to keep traffic moving right now, but there is a concern about that, watching that very closely. And there's been a concern all along about Interstate 80. Between mile mark, I think about 149 and 159, between Mitchellville and Colfax, probably more toward the Colfax side of that. My staff and Gene's staff have both, we're watching that full time also. There's water on the road, but it's still open. There is a concern that as the day goes on that there may be some restriction required, although we are not sure of that. But I just want folks to understand that that may be coming. We, the patrol and the DOT, have already worked in advance and have a detour that will be able to be marked immediately so that people won't be delayed because of the lack of a detour. So we'll be monitoring that. It's still open, but that is of concern. I want to mention from an information standpoint, there are three things that we have at the Department of Transportation that people can use to try and find out what's closed and what the status is of the roads they may want to take. First of all, we established yesterday morning a temporary customer service hotline. It's operating from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. We had to relocate it from our Ames offices late last night and get it set up down at our Ankeny Motor Vehicle Division offices, but it's fully operational and is taking all sorts of calls. That number is 866-452-8510, and as I said, 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., and it's explicitly for people to call and say, is this road open or this road closed? And I mean, that's what they're there for. It'll be answered by a person and try and address their specific route issues. Second, of course, is the traditional 511. If you're living in Iowa or calling in Iowa, you can call 511. If you're somewhere out of state, 800-288-1047. And that gets you, you know, road reports. And lastly, we put on our, right on our front page, if you go to www.iowadot.gov, I want to make sure I say that right, www.iowadot.gov, right on the home page we've put a interactive map so that folks don't have to go hunt for that anywhere, and you can go on there and it'll, you know, wherever you click, it'll tell you what's going on. So those resources are available.
Thank you very much, Nancy. Next, the director or the commissioner of public safety, Gene Meyer. Obviously, our thoughts and prayers are with the family of the young woman that was killed here in the Des Moines area, tragically, due to flash flooding. And public safety remains our top priority. And if you see the rate at which the water is continuing to move, in places like Ames, I think you'll really understand how dangerous the situation can be. And so we appreciate what law enforcement has done the last couple of days to try to keep the public away from these dangerous areas, but want to make sure people understand that these flash floods can happen very quickly, and it's important to listen to the warnings from Department of Transportation and from Department of Public Safety, and Gene Meyer will talk a little bit more about that. Gene?
Yeah, thank you, Governor. You know, the governor mentioned the terrible tragedy that's already occurred, and thank goodness there haven't been any more. But it's really common sense, and we urge people to use common sense, and that begins with just staying away from the floodwater. And people seem to think that they can drive through that water having no inclination about it. It really only takes 6 to 8 inches of water over the road to wash your car off the roadway. So people try to drive through that, and they're endangering themselves and the people that are with them. In addition to that, people walking through floodwater, they have to think about what they're walking through and what that floodwater can contain, the contaminants that can be in that water that are terribly dangerous to them. Not to mention the fact that generally they can't see the bottom of where they're walking. And if the road is washed away or if a manhole cover's been washed off and they fall through it, they can easily be seriously injured or killed. So the most common sense thing to do is to stay away from floodwater. Don't drive through it. Don't walk through it. The other caution, and Nancy mentioned this, especially at night on rural roads. I mean, we gave you a list of state roads that are closed, but out on local county roads where flash flooding can occur in the evening on blacktop roads, so I would urge the motoring public, if you're out driving on county roads in this state, reduce your speed, be cautious. If you come across water, you know, turn around. I mean, the common phrase now is turn around, don't drown. So those are the tips as it relates to water issues. The other thing I want to touch on briefly has to do, frankly, with electricity. And we have a handout for all of you that are some safety tips for Iowans to observe as it relates to water, what to do prior to a flood. If you have areas in your home that you believe may flood, you know, shut off the circuit breakers. Whatever you do, if it does flood and you haven't done that, don't be walking in water near electrical outlets. Again, common sense kinds of things. Also, the Electrical Inspection Division within our State Fire Marshal's Office is prepared to answer any questions for Iowans, and I'll give you a phone number. It's 866-923-1082. 866-923-1082. That's our Electrical Inspection Division within our State Fire Marshal's Office. So if there are any questions, and then after the waters go down, if you have electrical appliances that have been damaged, they're probably useless. If you have other times, make sure they're dried out well, and before you turn your electricity back on, please call us or get a certified electrician out to examine your home so you know that it's safe. And with that, I'll turn it back over to the governor.
Thank you, Gene. Finally, we really want to thank the effort at the local level. I was with Mayor Campbell and Ames yesterday and other elected officials, and they're doing an outstanding job. We have a lot of concerns in not only larger communities like Ames, but small towns like Luther, where they're currently pumping 4 million gallons out of that city. Dozens of towns and communities impacted, hundreds of homes, maybe thousands in terms of damage, and obviously hundreds of businesses. So we could use some volunteers. There's a hotline to offer to donate money, to donate water, whatever the case may be. Volunteers can call 515-239-5678, 515-239-5678. With that, we'd be happy to take questions. No. It's because there's not been a request for anything more than technical support, some logistical support, moving pumps, for example, and we are prepared, if necessary, to call up troops. The thing that really drove the 4,000 troops that were called up in 08 was the fact that we had to evacuate 40,000 people from 35 cities, and that had to happen quickly. In this case, we've had time to evacuate people without the help of the National Guard. And again, local law enforcement officials, local healthcare workers deserve enormous credit. We evacuated dozens of people out of critical care facilities, for example, in Ames. They had time to get people out. The Guard is ready. If any community believes they need additional support, we'll provide it, and that will not be an issue. Mm-hmm. Just so everyone knows, in addition to that, if we ever get in a situation regarding any natural disaster at home and we need more troops, we have an agreement with surrounding states, and that's the case with every aspect of our disaster response in terms of additional supplies, materials, human resources. We have compacts and agreements, so people should not be at all concerned with lack of resources.
Any timeline on when the federal
Dave, maybe an update on that, please.
Let me start with where we are. Earlier this year, in May, we had a disaster in southeast Iowa, in Lee and in Des Moines counties. That's already been granted for federal assistance, but only for public assistance, not for individuals and families. So it's damage to public infrastructure, buildings, roads, culverts, those things. Then for storms, June 1st and continuing, the incident period is still open. The governor made a request and was granted a major disaster declaration from the president for 32 counties for public assistance. We also asked for individual and family programs to be turned on at that time. And while we weren't specifically denied, FEMA declined to turn on IA programs at that time and wanted to gather more information on impact. What we did then is go out and do more joint preliminary damage assessments with FEMA. On July 30th, we asked for additional counties for public assistance, and on August 5th, we asked for additional counties, the original counties we'd asked for, and additional counties for individual assistance. We're still waiting to hear on those two requests. And then as we have damages beginning just a few days ago and we move forward, since the incident period is still open, if we have to ask even for additional counties and do more damage assessments to put more people in the add-on, we'll continue to ask for those counties. So to recap, you've got 32 for public assistance that are already granted by the president. You have a request to add more to the public assistance program. We have a request to turn on and add counties to the individual and family assistance programs. And then if we have to do more work to add even more on as the flooding continues, we will do that.
Just follow up, you've got 59 counties in state declaration. Mm-hmm. Will those be added on to the 32?
They're part of the 32. What we did, so you know the governor's proclamation, when the governor signs his proclamation, what it commits is two things, is state resources, and that's in terms of personnel, equipment, technical assistance, whether it's DOT, Department of Public Safety, the National Guard, Department of Agriculture. It brings those state resources to bear that are needed. The next thing that we do is ask the governor to turn on the state individual assistance program. We don't know if we'll get a federal declaration or not, but we want to help those that are most in need. And as the governor said, that's those that are within 200% of federal poverty. It's a grant meant to get you back on your feet up to $5,000. And that's what it's intended for. And it kind of echoes the federal program. We do that wondering if we're going to get the federal program or not, if we have a level of damages that warrants that. At the same time, we're seeing that we did, so we went ahead and asked for the federal program as well. Its thresholds are higher. It doesn't have this income limit, for one. It also involves SBA and low-interest loans. If you don't qualify for a loan, you can go to the grant. Maximum grants under the federal program, I think, now are just over $30,000. And so we're asking for those programs to be turned on in addition, and that's what we're waiting to hear about. I think many of them are working through that issue. We saw a little change in the policy on wind policy this year already, where they not only are giving tornado warnings, but they're giving high wind warnings when they expect the winds to go above 70 or 75 miles an hour, and we saw that happen. The Weather Service will also issue their flood warnings, and one of the things we did a number of years ago as part of a mitigation effort we had is we instituted NOAA weather radio service statewide. So we've always encouraged people to not so much wonder about what the siren means, but to go out and purchase a NOAA weather radio. In some cases, we had grants that actually purchased radios for citizens. Marshall County did that, bought one for every citizen in the county because there were grant dollars available to do it. So we've seen those efforts. We've seen widespread use of NOAA weather radio system. It'll give you flood warnings. It'll give you tornado warnings. It'll give you special alerts. And in addition to that, then we've seen communities such as Des Moines and others actually go to their own alerting system. They can alert neighborhood by neighborhood.
Dave, for the individual assistance program, how much money is indicated right now and how much we can potentially spend on this?
For the state or the federal program? In the state program, what will happen is the Department of Human Services administers the program. And what they'll do is once we figure out a county to be declared, they'll have a little bit of an indication of how many households they feel will be affected. And we do that in interaction with local emergency management. when they know that, they'll look at average grant awards. Average grant awards, where the maximum is $5,000, is probably about $2,500. They'll get a rough estimate. They'll go to the executive council and ask for money to be obligated towards that disaster. If they use it, they'll move that forward. If they don't use it, it goes back into the general fund.
And in terms of the fiscal year that we just started, the good news is we have $500 million in reserves, and the revenue is actually coming in higher than anticipated. So that's a good news in terms of resources that we might need to have for disaster recovery.
So you don't anticipate a budget problem as a result of this?
No. Wouldn't trade positions with any governor in America. AAA bond rating, balanced budget, $500 million in cash reserves. And we're looking forward to a very strong recovery and continued economic growth. Absolutely. As I've said, this is the new normal. We have seen just unprecedented flooding in Ames. This is worse than 93, and so anything we can do in terms of flood mitigation, flood prevention, we need to continue to make that a priority here at the Capitol. The good news is because of the Iowa Jobs and Infrastructure Initiative, there's $30 million available right now for counties and cities to apply for flood mitigation dollars. We're building a flood wall as we speak in Coralville with iJobs funds to protect 200 businesses on the Strip. We need to do more of that, and I expect with the type of flooding that we've seen, we will. We can also be smarter in terms of planning, in terms of conservation efforts. That's why I've called for a task force to come together and working with the legislature, leaders like Rob Hogue and Joe Bolcom and others. You know, we need to be very aggressive in terms of these steps related to mitigation, and I think we will as a result of what we've seen in 08 and again this summer. Absolutely, please.
Bill, one of the things in talking about floodplain and floodplain management, while that's been the emphasis, I want to emphasize another piece of this. Earlier in the year, Lieutenant Governor and I were in Clarion to look at flood damage there. And the important part that stood out about Clarion is there's not a river nearby. It wasn't river flooding. It was flash flooding and runoff. And what it would lead citizens to believe, if I don't live in that area and I don't need to live in the floodplain, I don't need to buy flood insurance and I need not worry. You do need to worry. And what we're seeing is almost anybody can be affected by flooding. And it's why we've been really promoting involvement and joining in the National Flood Insurance Program. There are always those that are required to have it as a condition of their loan, especially if they get federal money, or because they've been damaged before, and if they don't have it, they'll be disallowed from getting federal money in the future. There'll always be those folks, and that'll be the emphasis. What we're trying to emphasize is everybody really needs to look at flood insurance, and the communities need to look at involvement in the National Flood Insurance Program. And it's because anybody can flood, and we've seen that repeatedly all over the state. Right now, the governor talked about Luther. That's not riverine flooding. It's ponded water because the ground is saturated. Now think of that. They're moving 4 million gallons of water that is ponded in that community. Doesn't have anything to do with riverine flooding. It tells people they really need to look at flood insurance.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have to ask one more question.
Thank you very much. We'll keep you posted.